From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, while New Yorkers still think highly of the governor, a new poll shows they're not happy with secret middle-of-the-night budget dealing. Our political observer will share his thoughts on that and on a New York Times editorial that says the governor, while good, has too much power. And elected officials and environmentalists call for stricter supervision of the Indian Point nuclear facility. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A new poll finds that while New Yorkers still think very highly of Governor Cuomo, they are not as happy with recent developments in Albany that include a secretive middle-of-the-night legislative session and gerrymandered legislative district lines. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The poll by Quinnipiac University finds Governor Cuomo's approval ratings are at nearly an all-time high, with 68% of New Yorkers saying he's doing a good or excellent job in office. But Quinnipiac's Mickey Carroll says the voters surveyed are less enthralled with some of the action in Albany over the past month, including an all-night session of the legislature that approved, among other things, new district lines manipulated by majority party legislators. Three-quarters believe the lack of transparency over the policy issues decided that night are a serious problem, and the majority were concerned about the gerrymandered new district lines. But Carroll says they aren't ready to lay all of the blame on the governor.
People are concerned about the way things are done in Albany, but the prime doer, the governor, they think very, very highly of.
Sue Lerner is with Common Cause, a government reform group that fought vociferously for nonpartisan legislative district lines. She says she's not surprised that New Yorkers don't like decisions made behind closed doors.
This secretive approach to government, it's totally unnecessary, and New Yorkers agree. The public doesn't accept the explanation, "Don't worry, we'll handle it." In a democracy, it's the people who should decide how their government should run, and they need to be able to see how it's running in order to hold their elected officials accountable.
Governor Cuomo and the legislature did agree to work toward passage of a constitutional amendment that they say will result in less partisan Senate and Assembly lines when the next maps are drawn 10 years from now, and they did approve the state budget during daylight hours. But the governor, speaking to reporters in Buffalo, did not quarrel with the poll's findings.
Look, I understand you can always do it better, and our goal is a perfect process. And we're working very hard to make it perfect, but it is, while it's a worthy goal, it's often unattainable. So the more transparent, the better, I get it, and we're doing everything we can.
And as the poll indicates, for now, voters seem willing to give the governor the benefit of the doubt. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, you've been talking about the budget process for so many years now, including what's happened this year. Even though we have an on-time budget, a lot was done in secret. And we see that the New York Times finally weighed in on this, and they basically said, well, the governor is good, but he has too much power, and he's gotten too much power in the budget process.
Well, look, Andrew Cuomo is strategically brilliant, and he is nothing if not aggressive. He goes after a guy I think is a terrific civil servant, Tom DiNapoli. It's clear he doesn't like DiNapoli. He didn't endorse him in the last Democratic election, even though he's a fellow Democrat. And now he comes into his budget process and wants to deprive Tom DiNapoli of something called the pre-audit, meaning that, and we've talked about this here before, wants to take away from the comptroller's office, a separate part of the New York State Constitution makes a comptroller, the idea that they can do pre-audits on major contracts. That's ridiculous, folks. I'm just telling you that right now. If you're, you know, a slightly suspect, how do I put this, construction firm from New York City, and you want to bid on, let's just say, the several billion dollar Tappan Zee Bridge project, wouldn't it be good if the comptroller's office could say, wait a second, we know a little something about these people. We have to be careful here. This doesn't pass the stink test. So Cuomo comes along and says, now he wants to take that away from the comptroller. Now, I talked to Speaker Silver about that this week, and he makes it clear that the comptroller, while some of those pre-audits got taken away, not all of them, and some of the bigger ones they still have. But the fact is, his Cuomo's hand got pretty well slapped by the New York Times for trying to do that. He also did something else in the budget, which was to be able to take money from one of his executive agencies and give it to for another purpose. Wait a second now, folks. The reason we have a legislature and various committees is to make sure that the mental hospitals get the money and that the schools get the money and the rest of it. If you say to a governor, Governor, put the money where you want, how do we know that he won't put it where it's politically advantageous as opposed to where it's needed? There's an old saying that the mentally ill do not have, you know, alumni associations. And politicians know that. They want to put the money where not where it may most be needed or beneficial or right. They may put it where they'll get the most, you know, votes as a result of doing that. So the Times slapped Cuomo's hand. I won't mention that I have, because who would care? But the Times slapped his hand, and boy, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be the editor of the New York Times that night when that editorial came out.
Well, it's very interesting, because according to the latest Quinnipiac poll, the governor still has good poll numbers, but the voters also want to see more open state government in Albany. Mickey Carroll, who you know well, says, while Governor Cuomo maintains a good job approval rating, 76% of New Yorkers are concerned about the lack of transparency.
Yeah, well, a lot, as you know, David, depends on how you ask the question. So if you say, is he doing a good job, you got 68% saying, yeah, he's doing a good job. Well, what about the lack of transparency? Yeah, we don't get any transparency. Why? Because you don't try. Do you really care what's going on in state government? No, we don't know anything. They don't know the name of the legislators for a large part. They don't know anything else. And so, therefore, when you get that transparency question, you're going to simply say, no, I don't think there's enough transparency. Enough for what? Enough so that I know something, anything, you know, about state government. Now, you know, it's an interesting issue because this week I saw something. I began to hear something that I had not heard before. I thought I'd mention it to you, David. But do you know that Andrew Cuomo, I believe, is going to be running for president in 2016? Now we have Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand, touting Hillary Clinton for 2016. And we have some people touting Senator Gillibrand.
And even former President Clinton said he'd be happy if she chose to run.
Hillary Clinton chose to run. So now we have three potential New Yorkers whose names are being prominently mentioned, you know, for this job. And I noticed something about Cuomo. And that is, he's beginning to sound better. He has a terrible Queens accent, which I happen to think he inherited from his mom, who is a lovely lady, by the way. But it's a terrible accent. And I don't know if there's a Henry Higgins at work here. But I've been noticing that his accent is diminishing, and that'll play better in Kansas. Now, the one thing about Andrew Cuomo that I can tell you is he's a smart guy. And if he thinks that it will, and I've certainly written it in columns and things, if he thinks it'll cost him if he has this terrible accent, he's going to fix the accent. You know, that's what he's going to do. And I think that's what he's doing. You didn't ask me that question, but I thought I'd answer it anyway.
Can he beat Hillary?
Can he beat Hillary in a contest? I don't think so. Personally, we don't know. It's a long way off to 2016. Sure. He's got to be reelected. Anything can happen in that amount of time. And we don't know why Hillary Clinton is not going to be Secretary of State anymore and why she said that I'm not going to campaign for Barack Obama. That's an interesting phenomenon. So we don't really know all of that. You'd have to know the answers to those questions to know what's coming. But I can tell you one thing, it's a long way off. And in politics, you know, anything can happen in a short time, let alone a long time.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Elected officials and environmentalists are united in a call for stricter supervision and tougher regulations governing the Indian Point nuclear facility in Buchanan, New York. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Environmental activists say the New York State Department of Environmental Protection's imposition of a $1.2 million fine on Entergy marks a new and welcome level of enforcement of public safety requirements at the Indian Point nuclear plant. The DEC fine stems from a November 2010 transformer explosion, fire, and oil spill into the Hudson River at Indian Point 2. Manajo Green is the environmental director for Hudson River Sloop Clearwater.
Petroleum-based fluid leaked out into the Hudson River. And New York State is not going to put up with the ongoing problems that Indian Point has had.
Green believes the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been soft when it comes to Indian Point.
And that's especially true in the relicensing process, where things like evacuation, public health and safety, radioactive leaks into the Hudson River, these are things that are either not considered or minimized in the relicensing process.
New York lawmakers led by Bronx Assemblywoman Naomi Rivera have joined environmentalists in calling for a more comprehensive evacuation plan at Indian Point, expanding the evacuation zone from 10 to 50 miles and making that plan a condition for the facilities relicensing. Philip Musigas is Hudson River Program Director at Riverkeeper.
Indian Point is located about 34 miles from Times Square, and New York City is the economic capital of the United States. Keep in mind, within 50 miles of Indian Point is 6% of the entire United States population. Over about 20 million people live within 50 miles.
Entergy spokesman Jerry Nappi says the DEC fine imposed last week has led Indian Point to take positive action.
We're also working with the DEC to identify appropriate programs in the local community where about $600,000 of that penalty can be applied to benefit the environment.
Assemblywoman Rivera is calling for a state public hearing to examine evacuation and emergency preparedness in case of a radiation leak at the nuclear facility. She pointed out at a Tuesday press conference that within 5 days of the Fukushima disaster in Japan, dangerous levels of radiation had traveled 160 miles to Tokyo, prompting the U.S. military to issue potassium iodide pills to armed forces and their families and ordering American military ships out of Tokyo ports to avoid contamination. Jerry Nappi defends Indian Point's evacuation plan and design.
It's a plan that's tested and drilled multiple times a year, and then it's evaluated by the federal government, and it includes hundreds of people during these drills across different levels of government and here at the plant. You know, in terms of the plant design, it's built to withstand twice the worst level of flooding that's ever occurred at this location. That's something that was not built into the design at the Fukushima plant. We're also built to withstand an earthquake 100 times greater than has ever been experienced in this location.
Assemblywoman Rivera has legislation pending in committee that mandates New York stockpile potassium iodide pills and develop an emergency plan for their distribution in case of a nuclear accident.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
In the most recent Republican presidential primaries, Mitt Romney swept three contests, most notably in Wisconsin. As the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, candidates may soon be campaigning across New York as a divided party continues its selection process.
Former Governor George Pataki gave the keynote address during this year's Republican state convention. The speech was a rallying cry for the party and laid out an argument for a new president who's not a Democrat.
They are the party of a fake stimulus. They are the party of record food stamps. They are the party of unemployment over 8% for the longest time since the Great Depression. They are the party that believes government should be our master and not our servant.
But in the 20-minute speech, there's no mention of social issues like contraception, abortion, or same-sex marriage. And those issues aren't likely to come up in New York. Monroe County Executive Maggie Brooks, who recently announced her congressional candidacy, summed up the reason while speaking with reporters in Rochester.
You know, the social things don't get people back to work. The social issues don't lower taxes, don't relieve regulation from business.
So for a candidate like Mitt Romney, that plays to his strength. He's the businessman who runs against President Obama's record on the economy. For a candidate like Rick Santorum, that causes problems. He has established himself as the candidate more concerned with social issues. State GOP Chairman Ed Cox agrees that while campaigning across the state for New York's 95 delegates, the candidate should focus on fiscal issues like government spending and overregulation. But Cox says New York Republicans don't necessarily separate fiscal and social issues.
They know the candidates who are conservative on social issues are more apt to be really pro-growth, pro-fiscally responsible policy candidates, and once in office, they will in fact carry through those fiscal policies and those pro-growth policies.
That search for a reliable conservative and the conflict between the moderate and conservative wings of the party have defined the Republican primary. In New York, that conflict played out with the race between the hyper-conservative Carl Paladino and the more moderate Rick Lazio in the 2010 governor's race.
Well, I think the Republican Party in New York is going through a very painful period.
Michael Caputo, a political consultant who worked for Paladino, says that race showed that the party establishment is out of touch with the base.
When you're able to turn out two times as many voters for a candidate that had to fight his way onto the ballot like Carl Paladino, despite the fact that many considered Carl unelectable, you definitely got a difference of opinion between the rank and file and the leadership.
Caputo says that support was because Paladino was the true conservative. Romney's conservatism has been questioned often during the primary, but those doubts don't seem to be affecting New York Republicans. A Siena poll released in March had him leading Rick Santorum by 15 points among New York Republicans. Social conservatives like Reverend Jason McGuire of the New Yorker's Family Research Foundation say Republican leaders make a big mistake when they leave out the social message.
I think that's the struggle that the GOP is having in New York, is it has not figured out how to secure its base, but it's chasing after strictly a fiscal message. And if you try to separate fiscal and social conservatives, Republicans lose.
Santorum repeats that message often. The election is not just about the economy, despite what Romney says. On April 24th, he'll find out how many of New York's Republicans agree with him.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Hamilton County is New York State's least populous county. A Cornell forecast is projecting that the Adirondack Park County will continue to see decreases in the number of younger residents over the next few decades, leading to only a few dozen individuals in the 25 to 29 age group living there by 2040. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Cornell University's Program on Applied Demographics forecasts population trends across New York State. Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe said he had received a call from an economic consultant who told him about the Cornell projections for Hamilton County.
He said there's some startling information on these projections from Cornell that show in Hamilton County from 2010 to 2040, if current trends continue, the population would decline by 41%. And it's even more dramatic in the young population. It would decline in the male population from 25 to 29 years old down to a total of just 28 individuals if present trends continue. And there's only two counties that are wholly within the Adirondack Park, Hamilton and Essex. And so we also took a look at the Essex County projections. Again, these population projections indicates dramatic declines in Essex County in the young population. So we thought that was pretty startling information, and I thought it was important to share it with the review board.
In a county with fewer than 5,000 year-round residents, the population forecast is not a surprise. Hamilton County Board of Supervisors Chair Bill Farber explains that a 2009 projection updated in 2010 from the Adirondack Park Regional Assessment Project had similar conclusions.
It's something that some of us have been talking about now for a number of years. People are already thinking about why is it that that particular age demographic is leaving Hamilton County in such dramatic numbers. What do we need to do to stem the tide? How do we create the kind of economy and, frankly, the kind of quality of life that will keep those people here? And I think that is things like broadband, having wireless telecommunication opportunities available, using that to build an economy and looking at the kinds of jobs that fit in Hamilton County, and, frankly, using the regional council structure that was put in place by the governor that really allows us to look at the state region by region, which is clearly a much more effective way to do economic development in Hamilton County than any of the tools we've been given in the past.
The Adirondack Futures Project is working with the Adirondack Common Ground Alliance to map possible scenarios for the future of the Adirondack Park. Co-director Jim Herman says there are pockets across the Adirondack Park facing similar trends.
The problem is that they have a lack of critical mass. There's just not enough people. It's difficult to see what pulls them out of this gradual downward spiral. You know, people say, well, we need to attract industry there. Well, but what industry would go into Hamilton County without broadband internet service? There's no hope that we're going to attract new businesses there, and there's no hope that we're going to attract new people to live there. There are a few other places, like pockets, which you could point to and say the same thing's happening, but certainly nothing as large as Hamilton County. But that isn't true everywhere in the park.
The Local Government Review Board's Fred Monroe cites data from the 2010 census showing that the entire population of the Adirondack Park declined by 1,645 people between 2000 and 2010, and of the 92 towns wholly or partially within the park, 53 have experienced population declines, and 12 have total populations of 100 or less. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available by calling 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1214, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.